quieter than for the gender, as we can see, much of it on the basis of progress and innovation. A number of members are rather hoping that while they have no doubt we'll be doing some work, I suppose rather hoping we may all steer clear of hospitals and try to retain some measure of good health. I may suggest perhaps cycling or running, but now if we can move on to apologies, thank you.
We received apologies from Ms. Susan Demara, who has a prior commitment, and Mr. Becky Khadebe, who is attending his party members in his province. Received no other further apologies.
Thank you very much.
And that Mr. Salal will be arriving late.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hermans. Can we ascertain from other committee members, especially those who are here about the leadership and their party, as it were, if they are aware of apologies we may not have. Right. So, on that basis, I know that we're struggling to get hold of a Mr. Marlowe, and that's about it then, isn't it? I'm just looking. And what's happened to the ISP? Right, thank you. Right, well, that's apologies. And we, on the basis of this, we would like to look at the adoption of the agenda with one consideration. I really don't want us to guillotine 1300. Obviously, the plan is to finish there, if not earlier. But I'd like us to have some flexibility of 10 minutes or so, with our people starting to walk out. So I would appreciate that. Thank you. So on that basis, can we have somebody to propose adoption of the agenda? Thank you.
Colleague Chair, let all have a great 2012. And thanks for having led us well. It's not an easy thing, so thanks for that. I don't know how we can accommodate this point, because I did not attend last week's meeting because of communication breakdown. So I don't know how we can discuss it, but what I want to raise is that I got a message that says it's a reminder of a meeting is sitting, and I got it the same day the meeting was sitting. So I don't know how we can discuss this, because I don't usually want to miss a meeting. Thanks, Colleague.
Just a clarification on that. These meetings were arranged last year with members present, so it wasn't something done this year only. And then they were confirmed this year earlier. So it could have been that, there may have been a breakdown in November, December. That's what I'm thinking, because I think most members did have the program much earlier. But let me leave it there and ask the committee secretary to clarify that with his records. Can you do that then, please? That would be constructive. Right. Can we have someone to propose adoption of the agenda? Thank you, Honourable Member. Can we have someone to second it? Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Right, on that good note, we're able to briefly go to the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission, a progress report, and we do have with us a full team here, and that is led by the Commissioner, Ms. Astrid Luton, But before I welcome her, let me officially welcome the DDG, under which, of course, this immediately falls in the department, Ms. Ntuli. Thank you very much. So we will, you know, proceed as is our normal practice, Ms. Luden, and that is to allow you a free hand at this point, of course, within some time constraints. I see we're starting off very much on time, a few minutes after 10:15. And you can see here that we do want to do some deliberations at some point. So perhaps you could consider, questions and engagements at the very most a 20-minute input. I'm not sure if that would be adequate before we have the engagement. Thank you very much, Jen. That would be fine. And good morning, honourable committee members and chairperson. Let me first introduce the team that's here with me. I have Ms. Longisa Matandela, who's the head of our customer interface. To my left, and to the far left is Mr. Raymond Gundula, who's responsible for Clove Corporations at the at CIPC. So we're here this morning to give you an update on our previous presentations, both in July and in September. I think we gave you our latest update in September, and to just outline the achievements and the continuing challenges in some areas and what steps we're taking to address them. So you will remember from our previous presentations that the institution CIPC at inception and since inception has experienced certain challenges, and these have included weak administrative systems, backlogs that were inherited and that were also built up initially, our IT systems, legacy IT systems, our call center was unable to deal with the volume of calls and unable to also deal with the queries that we were getting from the public. Initially, there was a huge demand for restoration of deregistered companies, and that, coupled with the difficulties around the annual return system and billing, generated initial difficulties for the institution in the first 4 months of its existence. And then, of course, this was all compounded by limited awareness of the new legislation and its requirements on the outside, and also staff becoming familiar with new processes and new systems. In August, we initiated a project to clear backlogs across the organization. And there were backlogs in different parts. I mean, I think we mentioned there were some backlogs in HR, there were backlogs in the mail room. There were lots of pockets of backlog. And so we had a concerted project effort drive within the organization to try and clear all of that. And I must say that the organization delivered very good results internally. I think that in many, many areas, in most areas, the backlogs were cleared. You may remember that there were three areas where there was still a problem with the number of transactions. That was in new company registration, in amendments to companies, and amendments to closed corporations. So those were the three areas that remained at the end of August or the beginning of September. The project during that month gave us a very good opportunity to understand what we could expect from our staff, what kind of results we could achieve, and it also showed, in a sense, what problems can arise if you push too hard. So what we found is that there were a lot of errors were being made during that month. And that has fed through into some of the challenges we faced in the 4 months after August. So let me show you some of our latest results. We've summarized the first 8 months of lodgements, so applications received, as well as applications processed. And you'll see actually quite large volumes in some areas. So So in the first 4 months, we registered a lot of closed corporations. We still registered closed corporations until the end of December, but we are not registering any more now because most of those name reservations that were applied for initially have expired. So there's no legal mandate in that regard anymore, and we've switched to registering companies, and that's why the number of company registrations has increased. So in the first 4 months, we received 54,000 closed corporation applications, but only 14,000 company applications for company registration. But in the past 4 months, so in the period from September to December, 1st of September to the end of December, we received close to 53,000 applications for company registration. And we've received, probably because of the number of shelf companies that we register, a lot of requests for director changes. So we get a lot of requests, and a lot of them now are manual requests. You also see that we've registered a large number of names. And in fact, there's a bit of a discrepancy if you look at the number of applications for name reservation lodged versus company registrations and CC registrations. So there's probably a shortfall of about 30,000 names that have been registered that have not translated into company registrations. So we expect that there's a pipeline of company registrations that we'll get through because names are registered for a period of 6 months. So we don't necessarily see the registration coming through immediately. And in the area of cooperatives, you'll see that even though we had eliminated the backlog at the end of August, there is again a build-up of a backlog in that area. So these are the overall results for the organization. In the area of company registration and company amendments, I've indicated that during the month of August, because of the volume of work that was processed, there were a lot of errors made. And so that required us to rework and to correct those errors, which has slowed down some of the processing. But what we also did, it gave us a good indication of what is a pace of work that is sustainable in the organization. Because we shouldn't just focus on quantity, we also need to focus on quality. And it's a balance that needs to be struck. So we slowed down, in a sense, the work. We've also seen a substantial increase in company registrations in September. So, as I said, it was about 53,000 that we saw in the last 4 months of the calendar year. We allocated additional resources, and we were bringing on board more additional resources, 10 more resources for company registration, and Raymond can confirm a bit later whether they've started yet. And we are also, but what this has done is helped us understand what is the number of staff that we require in this area. So it's helped us revise our structure. And we're also putting in place an internship program to help us manage the period, sort of the additional resources until we can bring a permanent staff on board. In the area of cooperative registration, we've seen a substantial increase. There is a government drive. There's a drive by certain government departments for cooperative registration. And so the volumes of cooperative registration has increased. In the first 4 months, we received 4,000 applications, and in the second 4 months, we received 6,000 applications. So we've received close to 10,000 applications. And last year, in previous years, on an annual basis, we would receive 6,000 applications. So we will have doubled the number of applications processed this year, received and processed. We've also allocated additional resources. Because these processes are still largely manual, cooperative registration, even if we have an online registration process, will probably remain a largely manual capturing process on our part for some time. And you, I'm sure, are aware, it's fairly intensive because you have up to 12 members, on average 12 members, and you have to capture the details and make the details of each individual. So it is a labor-intensive and quite a slow process. The other area of concern was the call center, and these are the statistics for the period from June to December. The red column indicates the number of calls that were abandoned in each month, and the blue column is the number of calls answered. So you'll see in all the months except for December, the number of calls abandoned exceeds the number of calls answered. So the performance of the call center is clearly leaves a lot to be desired. And we've had a lot of considerations and discussions internally in the organization about what the best way is of dealing with it. At our last meeting, I mentioned that we were planning to outsource. And we initiated a whole process around the outsourcing. The reason why the decision to outsource hadn't been pursued in the past was because of the underlying IT system, and we had been under the impression that a solution could be found to that problem. But that was not the case. So our choice then was, if we outsource the call center, what we would be doing is effectively outsourcing the answering of the calls. So what would happen is, instead of holding for anything from 20 minutes to an hour to have your call answered, it would take maybe half a minute. But at the end of your call being answered, you would still not get resolution. So the question for us was, what is more important? Is call resolution more important, or is your call being answered more quickly more important? And our judgment and our decision on this is that call resolution is probably the most important. So what we've embarked on is a different process. Instead of expanding the call center, what we effectively are going to do, and the planning of this is in process, it'll be in place at the end of this month, is to decentralize the call center, the query handling, to the actual business unit. So we will take some of the resources in the call center and place them in the business units so that we get higher call resolution. So this is already the practice in the intellectual property area of the organization, where we publish the names of the individuals responsible for particular areas where queries will be directed to. So we will be directing queries from the call center directly to the business units where we will be able to get resolution. So this is going to be rolled out, as I said, at the end of this month. It's really about making people aware of who the individuals are. And as 70% of our applications comes through intermediaries, we think that it's a smaller number of people that we'll need to reach to get the names to them. So it will be available on our website, and it will be we'll find other ways of making it available to people. When people lodge applications, we'll give them the contact details. So that is the plan in the call center, and we're hopeful that this will achieve the kind of results that we think our clients need and the public needs. We've also implemented a number of other processes of the organization. One of them is the publication of service delivery standards. They've been published on our website since the beginning of December, and we are making them available to people now. They became effective on the 16th of January, and we're making them available to people as they lodge applications with us. The service delivery standards indicate the maximum amount of time that an application or that a process should take. So it should not be confused with the turnaround time. So what we're hoping is what I always call the Home Affairs experience, where you walk into Home Affairs to apply for a passport, and you're told that it'll take 6 weeks. And then after 8 days, you get an SMS to say that your passport is ready to be collected. That's the experience we're hoping that we we'll be able to deliver. In some areas, we'll be able to deliver it immediately, and in other areas, it will take a little bit of time. The importance about setting reasonable timeframes is that the reality is that turnaround times will vary. They will vary with volume. If anything happens in the organization, if there's a system crash for some reason, all of those things will affect the turnaround time. But the service delivery standard should not be exceeded. That's the rule in the organization, that the service delivery standard may not be exceeded. And what we will also be doing is revising the service delivery standards. This year we will be revising them twice, and over the next 5 years we'll be reviewing them continuously to bring down the number of days on the service delivery standard as the organization, as the processing and the processes in the organization improves, and more online transactions come on stream, we think that the service delivery standard will be reduced systematically. We've also rolled out the online company registration on the 16th of January. The uptake on that is still slow, which we think is very good because we're still finding some minor errors in it, and we're updating that as we go along. And so I think in the next week we'll start our awareness campaigns around this. We also procured, which has been in the pipeline for a long time, uniforms for the frontline staff. Longisa says they will only unfortunately be delivered on the 13th of February. So the middle of February they will be on our staff, essentially to help members of the public distinguish agents from our staff, because that's a lot of what happens is agents present themselves as CIPC staff, and it creates a lot of confusion and also opportunities for rent seeking. So that we think is going to be quite important, as is the change in the layout of our front office, but that's still a process with the building administrators. That's taken a bit longer than we'd hoped. We also think that data quality is very, very important, historical data quality, but also going forward. So there is an emphasis on the capturing side going forward to achieve greater accuracy and quality, but we also need to correct the historical data. There are a lot of missing fields, and so we've issued a tender that is in the process of being adjudicated. We also issued a building tender, and I think we're in the final adjudication of this. It's quite a big tender, so they are crossing all the T's and dotting the I's on it. But I think in the next couple of weeks we will have finality on that. And then, you know, I think we've indicated before, we've spent quite a lot of time on designing our new organization. It is, in a sense, about structuring a new organization and restructuring an existing organization. But it's been a very participatory process, and I think we've taken everybody along. So in conclusion, we've done a lot of work in the organization. Things have, I think, largely settled down. In the beginning of the year, there was a lot of instability, but things have stabilized. And everybody, I think, is working very hard towards improving. It's continuous improvement is the mantra in the organization. But we realize that there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. I think I indicated to you in July that I thought it would be an 18-month project, and I will confirm today that I think it is an 18-month project to achieve the kind of results that I think we need to achieve as an organization. But we're well on our way, and our journey continues. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Luden, Commissioner. It was a very, very concise, focused, I think, input to us. So I think, members, we have the opportunity of clarifying, commenting, or raising a few questions. So by show of hands, thank you very much. We had starting from the other side, Honourable Smala. Yes, Honourable... McIntosh and Honourable Mabasa. Honourable Quabarth, Honourable Harris. And just to indicate to yourself, Honourable Salal, we received your late apology. Thank you. I think that the Honourable Albert. Right, in that order.
Thank you, Jay, and thank you, Commissioner. And I'm sure it's not an easy ride to where you are, and I'm still sure that there's still going to be numerous headaches. I'm glad to see that there is going to be some distinguish between your personnel and the agents, because it's all about your service delivery towards the client or to the public outside there, and how the public perceive the department in doing business. Let me start there too. Are your officials actually hold to those standards of quality and services, and because you were referring to not quantity but to the quality of work, have you got some sort of a program within that you monitor the quality of your administrative staff? Are you allowing agents to assist or to promote, maybe the word is promote, to promote themselves within your office space where your actual frontline services are? You referred earlier to your three most backlog areas, and you said that maybe pushing those backlogs resulted to some errors that came about. Are those errors due to not enough HR personnel? Are those errors due to insufficiency of the actual personnel, maybe the quality of the personnel, their skills? So that I would like just to understand that part. You have doubled the applications, or that you have received under the applications that you've actually lodged. Would you say that due to the previous year since you started, would you say that it's because the administration is being run better that you are managing to double the outcome of StopPNL, the outcome due to the past and your interventions, in short? Thank you, and then maybe later on, if I'm not covered, I will come out a second time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I must say, if confession comes before repentance and a full confession, we've had a very full confession. It's a very bleak report, very bleak. And I must say, as a South African, Madam Chair, I am extremely distressed that what is a fundamental element in building the economy of this country has not yet been sorted out. But I think, to the Commissioner's credit, she's been honest, and her two team members with her, and I think she accepts to stay for 18 months. She's doing her best, but I want to tell you that we think that we're trying to run a world-class country. When people have to wait 20 minutes and 1 hour to get a telephone call answered, Madam Chair, we are running a banana republic, not a world-class country. And I'm very distressed. So I can nitpick that, but I think the great thing is it's been disclosed, and the Commission's, I think, being very honest, and no doubt their colleagues as well, and they're clearly addressing the issue, they're clearly recognising the problem, but I think we would support them in that. But I don't think we would lose the bigger picture, Madam Chair, that this is a very, very important institution in the economic life of the Republic of South
Africa. Thank you very much, Honourable McIntosh. Honourable Mabasa.
Thank you. Thank you, Comrade Chair. Commissioner, thanks for the input. My question is, I think that as an institution, the more we are in control of what we are doing, the better. So I say this statement because when you stressed outsourcing because once you outsource, it means you are not really in control of the personnel. Although, yes, the results will come, but, and also in terms of empower, because those outsourced people, it's as good as saying they are not part of your department. So it means their growth, they can't be grown to the benefit of the institution. So that's my concern. I'm asking myself, is it so difficult for personnel inside the department if they are increased in terms of numbers, if they are well trained to answer calls, so that we don't have outsourcing? I'm one of those people that don't really favor outsourcing. And then the second part is the agents. How will the agents be influenced to act in unison with the interests of the department? Because they are independent, loose cannons, unscrupulous, some of them. Aren't we exposing the people that we seek to serve to a frustrating world out there? So that's, in other words, what the agents are doing, is there no way that the department can also take part of that job so that it is inside the department, like advising clients as they come in? Couldn't it be done better by the department so that we also save on the middle person? Thanks, Colleague Chair.
Thank you very much, then, Honourable Mabasa, Honourable
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I just looking at the numbers that have been presented to us on page 3, the top of page 3. That's right. It seems to me a lot of ground has been covered since the time we last had an engagement. And I think it would be fair to say that it seems to me a lot of good work is being done. And for that we must commend the commission. I must also say that we are encouraged by the openness and the frankness with which the commissioner has reported back to us. And quite clearly, things are going to improve. Things are going to get better all the time. I just want to seek clarity on three issues. The first is on the issue of additional resources that you're making reference to on page 3. As to whether you're talking to human resources and material resources, just that clarity. And secondly, when do you plan to have a permanent structure in place? And that links to the issue Comrade Bob was raising, Comrade Babas was here next to me, about outsourcing, as to whether outsourcing is linked to the fact that you don't yet have permanency and you're not settled yet? Or is it, in your view, something that you're going to be doing for as long as you think it is necessary? One would have, you know, wished what Comrade Mawas was saying would obtain at some point when you have everything in-house and under your control. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Kobasa. Honourable Harris.
Thanks, Chair. I'm afraid I don't have as sunny a view on this as many of my colleagues here. Essentially, when we went to visit CPIC in Pretoria, it was clear it was in a very bad state. Then there was a commitment from the Minister and the Commissioner to resolve the backlogs and the various other problems. When the update came in September, things were looking good, and I think we all gave the Commission the credit for the improvement. But it seems to me that there's been a dramatic slide away since then, a dramatic decline. I'm just looking at the backlogs, which in September were, the total backlogs were 6,700. Now they're standing at 19,000. So since the Commission was last here, the total backlog has tripled. There was also a commitment from the Commissioner in September, and I'll read from the report, the presentation she gave there, that the company registration backlogs, which at that time were 3,900, would be cleared over September and October with help from additional resources from SAICA and internal reallocation. The problem is, Chair, despite that commitment, the company registration now stands at the backlog of 13,000. So I guess the first question is, what happened? What caused this deep significant backtrack, rather, despite the commitments made in September? And then secondly, the call centre is really also, I'm afraid, moving in the wrong direction. We had the numbers of calls abandoned down to around 50% by August, but it looks on page 4, I'm not sure what slide that is, but the slide with the graph of the calls answered, over that period it's declined to November, where now 71% of calls aren't answered. So, Chair, that raises questions about the outsourcing strategy. And I have a few there. The first one is I still fail to understand how the IT system and network ability can be so difficult in terms of outsourcing. If you look at the direction technology is going around the world, we're making significantly difficult problems look easy. Yet, I would imagine not be a large problem compared to some of the huge corporate integration exercises that happen around the world. At SIPS, suddenly outsourcing is not an option. I also, on that slide, which is titled Reasons for Numbers, instead of that one, it's actually not that one, Chair. It's on page 4 in the handout we were given. But this decision that SIPS is not going to outsource, but rather that they're going to decentralize the call center. When the Commissioner described that to me, the new approach, it seemed to me that that's exactly what they should be doing now. I'd like to understand what the difference is between the current system and this new approach of so-called decentralization. Chair, in July, there were, I think, 46 vacancies at the SIPS, and then in August they came and said there were 56. I'm interested in the update now. What is the vacancy figure? And then my last question, Chair, on the company hijackings, which the Minister replied to a parliamentary question to say that 10 companies were hijacked between August and November. I believe at that stage, when we got the answer, one of those hijackings had been resolved, and then my attention was drawn to a notice from January which said that actually 7 of 10 of them had been resolved. And the notice specified that the 7 were actually linked to internal affairs at their own companies and therefore not the fault of CPIC. However, that leaves three. And in that notice, which the commissioner put out on the 10th of January, she said, investigations on reported cases revealed that directors were wrongfully changed due to errors that occurred during capturing of the amendment forms. The CPIC appointed more resources to correct incorrect capturing. My question to you is, does that incorrect capturing apply to the three remaining cases? Because otherwise the numbers don't add up. There's either seven cases where there were internal issues with the companies, one that was resolved, and then three remaining. How do these wrongful changes fit into that? Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Harris, Honourable
Albert. Thank you, Chair. I'm also quite concerned about the state of affairs, considering the importance of this agency for our economy. And I also would like to add my voice with regard to personnel problems. And I would like to link personnel also to quality of service delivery and standards. The question I want to ask is, is there a personnel problem in terms of numbers and quality, quantity and quality problems? And in terms of training the personnel and the goal that they have to work towards, what are the benchmarks that you use? Are there international benchmarks that you use? I would like to see personally that we work towards other African countries who set the pace. Apparently, the DRC, you can register a company within 24 hours. And I would like to see that happen in South Africa. It will speed up our economy, and it will most certainly help entrepreneurs to get the economy going. And then I'd just like to also reiterate Honourable Harris's view on the hijackings. And just add to that, I would like to know what systems are you putting in place to this from happening, as this really undermines the integrity of the system and it creates a perception that Africa is not a place to do business in. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Albert. Honourable Salal. Thanks, Representative. Once more, I want to apologize for coming late. I had something I could not postpone. Whilst the committee members are being hard and anxious on the progress made by the Commission, we should remember that it was only 2 months ago that this Commission was put in place. The aims and intentions are high. And I think life from the report shows that we may be moving into there. There are problems there. But there is also progress made in between the time before the Commission existed and now. The process of capturing is going on. The process of registering is going on. All these processes are unfolding. There are weaknesses. What impresses me is that the Commission is not coming here to say there are these weaknesses, we are seeing them and we will live with them. But the Commission is saying to us there are these weaknesses, we are aware of them, we are taking steps to deal with these weaknesses in order to deliver a world-class organization as it is requested. That's good news to me. Areas that I see as of real focus are the areas relating to the call center and areas relating to the backlogs. And I think members are rightfully, and all of them agree to say the idea of outsourcing is not a preferred idea. And I think the idea of restructuring other than outsourcing should be looked at, and that the Commission's proposals of decentralization be perhaps more explained to see if that could be. But I want to caution, Chairperson, that we should not find ourselves as a chairperson, as a committee of parliament, concentrating on operational issues. We should not find ourselves trying to run the commission. But what we should find ourselves is getting this commission to meet the standards it is expected to get. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Fanal. Of course, as you know, my recollection is not 18 months, but rather 8 months, but I haven't got it in front of me. But yeah. Right. So not quite nowhere near a year yet. I think, you know, at this stage, one just wants to make one comment here, and that is, as one recalls from the July presentation there, the call centre was quite a major focus at the time, as well as the tremendous, both historical and other backlogs. And then what was referred to as admin issues, which seemed to be also management, broadly speaking, issues. Now, we have had the explanation on the call centre quite clearly, you know, and the measures which you're now putting in place. And then the backlogs. Was I correct in understanding that you were saying you had addressed the backlogs and now there's a kind of accumulation again? There seemed to have been, you know, a real slowdown there. It was, they'd all been addressed for majority, and then it started up again. I'm not sure what, I may not have heard you indicate the reason why that came about. And then these management admin issues, if I recall, was about the silliest of things I could remember. Something about toners and all the things I complained about picking up a phone. You know, that kind of thing, you know. But then management, I'm not too certain what exactly that was meant to cover offhand. So if you could just clarify that, it may well have something to do with the vacancy rate. And so on and so forth. And if you would confirm the comment you made last time in respect of the possibility of outsourcing, as I think you mentioned you were using a few temporary students or something, that you know, you gave a number of reasons. Among them was we were waiting to see exactly what it was that was required for the longer term and not just the emergency first year, as it were. Now, I may not be using the words you used, but words to that effect then. So if you would just clarify that, but I must say, it has been quite an impressive progress so far, but now just this, we do require these clarifications. We don't want to see further hijacking, and we certainly would not like to continue to hear of calls being abandoned to this degree. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'll ask my colleagues to come in on some of the issues. Let me start with the first set of questions from Mr. Smiller. We have got standards internally, but I think performance management is one of the areas that we really, it's not just about the performance management, evaluations about the whole system. That is an area that we are reworking at the moment in the organization. It links very closely with the kind of standards, the kind of targets that you set. And that's what we spent a lot of time reviewing and we're still reviewing. So I think, I don't think that we have sufficient processes in place everywhere in the organization to monitor quality. We're doing quite well in that, in the area of intellectual property. And so what we've been doing is reviewing the processes that are applied in the intellectual property area and applying some of those principles in the area of company registration and amendments. So, but This is an area that we're working on. I think it's a major area. Performance management in the organization is a major issue. It's the system currently is not, there's no proper alignment throughout it. So we've made incremental changes to it, but we're looking to overall performance management completely for the new, in the new financial year. Lungiso, do you want to talk about the whether we're allowing agents in front and some of the other issues that related to your area of work?
Thank you, Chris. I'll start with the issue of agents, whether we allow them to come in the office or even assist our customers. In terms of the customer interface, especially working areas, we really don't allow agents inside there to interact with clients. We do have a two marshals as well as security that is assisting us to do exactly that. But as we were saying, the challenge was to actually distinguish ourselves from the agents, because even if we have sometimes name tags, you will find out they actually get the name tags. I don't know how, but they do that. So we realized that for us, in order to be able to have that distinction better, we need to ensure that our staff wear uniforms. And the other initiative that we have done outside the same offices, we've got the big placards that indicate to customers that we actually do not have agents. And also to ensure that our staff must really communicate with clients when they come inside to say, these are the processes that we should follow. We shouldn't be approached by people who are actually saying they are going to do business for you and overcharging. So we are trying to, we have some controls in place. Yes, they might not be adequate for now, but we will, the uniform I think will assist us very much to actually ensure that clients can distinguish between agents and ourselves. But the rule has been no agent should assist customers. It's like at the bank, when you come in, the bank takes charge of the environment. So that's what we're also trying to do. In terms of the outsourcing, I'll speak, I'm not sure whether the commission will want to add more, but just to explain further, to say what has transpired since September, just maybe bring a little bit of detail, to say we had started with the initiative of outsourcing. However, through our assessment, because we had to look at every aspect to say, should we outsource? What value are we going to get from that outsourcing in terms of the service provider or the staff from the service provider being able to be responsive to our clients? On our ICT side, we really experience challenges, because one of the areas is that our systems are legacy systems, older systems, whereby if you expose them to a service provider, there might be security issues. And other applications really wouldn't, the service provider wouldn't be able to access them. Therefore, we would not have gotten the value that we wanted, and looking at the cost of outsourcing. That is why we said, okay, let's look back. Probably while our ICT systems are still being improved, because we have those initiatives in place, we look internally. How do we internally look at ourselves and see how do we improve handling of calls? So we're saying we're going to decentralize the query resolution system and ensure that we have smaller teams, like in for example, you can say account management, whereby they will be looking at specific areas, for example, a team that will be dealing with change of directors or amendments that will be specific to that area, and equip those teams. Remember, we didn't have a call center before, so there's a juncture in the staff that were in the call center. So we need to train those staff and equip them and ensure that they're able to be on the same maybe level with the people at the back office. So they're going to go to the back office and sit there and become a query resolution team. Hopefully it will give the results that we want. We could get first-time call resolution and be able to respond to customer queries. And also what is critical is for them to have the view that the back office that it can have to say, to be able to respond, say, if a client, calls us, they must be able to say, this is where your document is, or this is the status, this is how we're going to have it resolved the first time. So that is it in terms of my response. Thank you.
Thanks, Lungiso.
Raymond, would you like to talk to the reasons for errors? Why are we seeing so many errors?
Okay. Thanks to the commission. I'll start when we start implementing this the CIPC commission. When we started, you will remember very well that the new act provides that we no longer register new feces. And when we started implementing this new Companies Act, we received a lot of applications, more especially from the public, due to the fact that we were not registering CCs. That's why we're having a lot of backlogs. When the commissioner joined us, she introduced what we call as incentive scheme, wherein we were busy trying to eradicate the backlog that was created, let me say, in the past. What we did, hence I've already alluded to say that we received a lot of applications due to the fact that we were no longer registering new companies. But we were given time frame to say that we need to complete this particular backlog within this particular time frame. And we were waiting under pressure to make sure that we conclude the said backlog. Along the processes, due to the fact that we're waiting in hurry in order to meet the deadlines and whatsoever, we ended up committing a lot of errors due to the fact that we wanted to clear the backlog. But when coming to the issue of quality, yes, within our office we have got a team that normally deals with the issues of quality. Whenever a personnel after capturing a file, the quality teams normally check the final product as to whether it has been captured correctly. And I think, in short, that's that which contributed or which mostly contributed to the issues of errors. And the commissioner has also provided us with some resources, but it's within a short space of time for about 3 to 4 months. And the problem that we had experienced was to say that due to the fact that the staff members that we got were not properly trained, it also contributed to a lot of errors and whatsoever. But however, we have tried within our domain to make sure that we correct those particular mistakes, and we are still busy trying to make sure that we correct the said mistakes, as is evident from the stats to say that we have reduced a number of mistakes, more especially in company amendments.
Thanks, Raymond.
Okay.
Okay, so let me add to what Raymond said. Raymond, a lot of the errors, as Raymond said, resulted from August, from the pressure that was placed on staff to try and clear the backlog. But I think the reasons for the errors there are a number of reasons. In the intellectual property area, we do every application is proofread. So you basically have 100% quality assurance. Whereas in the company registration, because of the volume, the team that Raymond referred to reviews 10% of the applications. And I think it's not enough. So part of this for me is about the performance management and the requirements and the accountability of the teams that are responsible for capturing. So it is about adding accuracy and rework to your performance management system. It's also about improving the quality, the number of transactions that are quality approved. I think it's not, there are issues around when we bring on board temporary resources, it always puts a lot of pressure on the divisions because they have to spend some time training. Because I think one of the issues that I've certainly identified, and I think there was another question related to training, I think it was from the Honourable Albert. The training on the capturing side is, yes, there's a need to understand the legislation, and that takes time. And then there is a need for staff to understand the legislation, the legislative requirements, and to understand the system. And those are the two kind of things that they really need to understand. And you need to have internal guidelines. And that is a weakness that I've certainly seen. We don't have enough guidelines. The way what happens is when staff comes aboard, they get taught by other staff. So we are on the new companies online. We've taken a different approach. So what we've done is we've developed a video for how to lodge it and how it's processed. And we're using that both externally but also internally. And that's what we need to do. We need to develop these guidelines and sort of visual training tools that we can apply internally and externally. So quality is a major issue, I think, because data integrity for us is a major issue and a major focus. So we are working on, I think, in order to address the quality issues, there are a lot of process issues that, you know, the processes need to be re-examined, and there's an accountability. Part of the reason why query resolution needs to be decentralized is because a lot of the queries received relate to incorrect capturing. What is the status of my billing in my annual and around annual return? I'm struggling to lodge an annual return. And those kind of questions, specifically around changes and status of applications, are best answered by the people who are responsible, because they would then have the capacity to effect the change. So that's the capacitation of the query resolution team that Lungisa has referred to. The other question related, so the errors result from having temporary staff that are not necessarily experienced on the procedures and the systems, from our existing staff capturing too fast and not doing quality checking. There may be some skill issues around data capture, but what I've seen from the quality reports is that I think it's primarily there's an accountability issue. So that's why the performance management system is very important. Has the administration improved? I think the biggest issue in the organization, and I'm sure my colleagues will agree, was one of accountability. Who's accountable for what? And Chair, I think that also talks to the questions you've raised. It really is about ensuring that people are responsible and accountable for particular issues, and that that's managed, and that that translates into a performance system. So those are the changes we are focusing on and implementing. But it is, you know, it's these things. You cannot implement these things overnight, because you need to. One of the things that I've realized is the biggest, one of the biggest issues is change management. It's about managing change within the organization and outside the organization. Every time we change process, or it can be one small thing, one change on the IT system or in a form, it has a huge impact on the outside. And so we need to manage it. Set of questions from Honourable McIntosh. I think it's probably a comment around the state of the institution. And I appreciate that it is a bleak report. I must say that I feel optimistic, because I feel that we understand the problems. At least we know what the problems are, and we know we're starting to understand how we can address them. Given the resources, given the systems that we have at the moment. And a lot of it really comes down to the way we manage our staff and the organization, and the commitment from the staff and the engagement from the staff. And that's what makes me feel optimistic, because I really feel that we have an organization that is committed to improving. So I think, as I said, right in the beginning, it is a process. It's not going to happen overnight. But I think I can certainly see the tangible steps and the improvement in the organization. The issue of outsourcing is, and Lungisa has already answered to, but I think there was a broader issue about how are we using outsourcing. We've had a lot of discussions internally, because there's a lot of experience in the organization. I think there are people that have been in the organization for quite a while, and they've seen a lot of different initiatives and attempts. So it is about drawing on the experience, understanding the reality of our situation, and finding the right solutions. Outsourcing, what we think is that we cannot outsource anything completely, but we can co-source in a number of areas, because we do need to bring certain skills on board, and that will take time. Hopefully over time we can build all the capacity in the organization, but we will need to co-source in a number of areas. ICT is probably the main area. The other area is, for example, internal audit, where we co-source a lot. So about agents, agents are a major issue for the organization, I think, because it has such a big impact on the public and because it's a big risk for us. A lot of the fraud that's happened has come in from the outside through agents. And yes, there may have been collaboration on the inside, but in a lot of instances, it's just fraud that comes in from the outside, identity theft. So we think that what we need to do is we need to regulate those intermediaries that interact with us. We need to change our systems, because what happens at the moment is everybody who transacts with us gets a customer code. And what we need to distinguish are people that get a customer code because they are the customer and the intermediaries. But, you know, for example, in the intellectual property area, more than 80% of our transactions come through intermediaries. They are legal practitioners. In the companies area, we have a range of intermediaries, and that's, we need to tighten that up. So we are looking to introducing next year a registration scheme for intermediaries, and where we need to exercise a lot more control over that. In terms of the additional resources, they are primarily additional human resources that we've been talking about. And it is about managing a transition to a new institution or a new structure, maybe rather not a new institution. We are in the process of finalizing the structure. We're just going through aligning it again to the strategy, because that has been evolving, and understanding exactly what the volumes are. The difficulty is that the volumes keep increasing, and it's very hard to predict what the volumes will be. So we've got to become a lot better at predicting what the volumes are and working back to the human resource requirements. It's a balance between the human resource requirements and the ICT capacity. So I'm certainly understanding that a lot better, and I think in the organization we're understanding that a lot better and trying to be a lot more scientific. It is very much, the reason why these backlogs build up is about our ability to predict what we're going to receive and what the resources are that we're going to need. So what I think we've managed to do in the past 8 months is determine, almost output criteria. Output. We know now for each different type of transaction what we can expect staff to process in a day, in an hour. And now that makes it easier for us to predict the human resource requirement. But I think that's why we've been seeing these build-ups. In the cooperative area, it really is because it's been a concerted drive by government. And I think we're a little bit slow in responding, even when we know. We saw the government drive, but we didn't know what the impact would be. So we need to become better at anticipating that. And it's hard to be that flexible with staff, because you can't just bring staff on board and train them. It takes us 3 months to do that. Whether it's temporary or permanent, it takes us 3 months. So that's why we've taken our time over fully understanding the structure. But we are subjecting the draft structure we now have to an external review, and then we'll submit it to the minister. I think that our structure will be in place by June, which is when I hope we'll also move into a new building. So then the questions about from the Honourable Harris. I think, you know, I made those commitments in September on my understanding of what we could deliver as an organisation. But I didn't realise how tired the staff was after August. So there was definitely a dip that happened in September. And what had, the reason why I think we were able to achieve the targets in August is, well, obviously, as Raymond just said, the staff pushed themselves very hard. We had an incentive scheme in place. But it was also because we monitored performance on a weekly basis. So there was a very intensive focus for a period of time on the performance, operational performance. And after we achieved the targets, we didn't keep up the momentum around that. And I think that has contributed. So we've looked at institutionalizing that, weekly meetings throughout the organization. And that cascade up. So because it needs to start at a supervisory level. One of the weaknesses that I've certainly identified is at the supervisory level, because it's almost your first line of management. That is the key to unlocking performance in an organization like ours. And so we need to focus our training at that level, I think, because that's where performance management, output management, really is primarily managed. I would have liked to have been here and to have presented to you a better picture. But I think we've implemented some management changes as well, and we've implemented system changes. So I think that I'm very loath to give you a commitment now to say that, you know, we're going to clear a backlog of 13,000 in 3 weeks' time. But I'm confident, what I can say is that I'm confident that the management that we've put in place will be able to resolve those issues. On the company changes, there's been a change in what we've received. We used to receive a lot of electronic transactions and not that many manual transactions, but that's changed. I'm not exactly sure why. We need to find out why. But the balance used to be 30% manual, 70% electronic, and it's changed. It's swung the other way around, 30% electronic and about 70% manual, which has again put pressure on the staff that's existed to capture rather than to verify what we've received. So that's part of the reason. And then we've also, in terms of this quality control, put a lot more emphasis on the review of those company changes. So the processes were in place, but our internal audit reports indicated that the processes, that there wasn't sufficient quality control, and so we've required for the quality control, which has slowed it down. So that is my explanation around the increase in the backlog around company amendments. But we can work through those. I think it's important that we get the processes right. On the call center, I don't know if I've dealt with your concern around the call center. What I think Mangisa captured it correctly. What we're talking about decentralizing is not the call center, but the query resolution. It's just that I think about 70% of what the call center deals with now is queries. That's why people are holding on. So when I spoke to somebody about the call center outsourcing, this person had managed both the Metropolitan call center and had also set up the SARS call center. And what he said to me is that at Metropolitan, people waited for 3 to 5 minutes for their call to be answered, but they had a high degree of first call resolution. Whereas at SARS, they had a half a minute wait time, but call resolution took a lot longer. And because you have to escalate, a lot of those queries get lost. So what we are trying to achieve is better call resolution. And outsourcing will not result in better call resolution. You can do outsourcing and achieve good call resolution when you've got good IT systems, not the kind of legacy systems that we have. So until we've resolved the legacy system on the company side, we're still going to have to deal with that. And I think it's much better also for accountability, because a lot of the queries relate to errors and issues like that. It's much better to locate that accountability at the source of where it's derived. So it's something we're trying. I think when we come back and we report to you again, I hope that we can report a better picture on that. When Lungisa and I reviewed the November reports for the call center, my immediate reaction was that we should close it down, that it's not worth it. It's not delivering any service to people. So this is a halfway house, and I think we'll achieve better results this way. Hijackings. I think the other area is hijackings. The parliamentary question was related to the number of complaints that we've received of hijackings, and we had received during that period 10. We've investigated, well, three of them are still, I need to check, I think they're still under investigation. But of the 10, 7 had been investigated, and we found that they were not hijackings. They were, in fact, relating to internal disputes. Many of the complaints we get are people who feel that they were wrongfully removed. But they were wrongfully removed, they feel they were wrongfully removed, but there was, it's not for us to enforce the internal workings of an organization if there's a dispute between directors or shareholders. We need to ensure that the procedure that they followed complies with the requirements of the law. So when it follows the requirements of the law, we effect the changes, and those are legitimate changes. But we need to treat all complaints of hijacking seriously. That's why we investigate them. What we've also received were not complaints of hijackings, but complaints and queries around, you know, this director has appeared on my statement and shouldn't be there. We've got nothing to do with this person. It wasn't a complaint of hijacking. But there's clearly an error. And so those errors that we refer to are over and above. Those are not formal complaints that we receive that we've investigated, but those are queries that we receive on an ongoing basis. I think that's it. Sorry, I've taken a lot of time.
No, I'm pleased you were able to respond now. There are a few more questions which we can't take right now. I know that. Because I never really see your faces, but some of you indicated that. What we will do is allow members and encourage them to put this in writing to the committee secretary today or tomorrow morning so we can send it off. And we will then get a written response. But I would like to thank the Commissioner for being here. I think one thing was agreed upon in the committee, and that is that it was at least frank. There was that, you know, consensus. Honourable Harris, I'm adjourning for tea. We are returning, but it is now 8:30. I don't have a choice if we're going to stick to the time.
No, Chair, I understand that, and I'll definitely submit further questions in writing, but I did ask a question about the vacancy rates and the shortfall of agents in the call centre, and that wasn't answered.
In fact, there were three around staff. You asked a similar one, I think. Well, not the vacancy rate per se, but on training, Honourable Elbert.
Chair, an important question hasn't been answered either, as far as I know, and that's about the benchmarking and what the CIPC wishes to achieve. Thank you.
The Secretary does have three down, that's two of them, and there was a third one. I'm not sure. Anyway, we'll go over it. We do need to have a semblance of time. It was my intention to have tea break at 8:15. It is now 8:30. But this is valuable. And the questions about benchmarking relate directly to the quality issues. So it must be responded to in writing. And a clear matrix of the vacancies and the measures taken in that regard. I'm sure that's quite clear. So I'd like to thank the Commissioner and her team for at least the frank sharing of that information, and invite us all to take a short tea break. Very short, 5 minutes.
Like the other.
Thank you. I feel
Thank you, members. The minutes are now done, and we'll move on to the substantive matter before the committee. Again, another progress report on this time the National Consumer Commission. And really, we wish to welcome Ms. Maslala, the National Consumer Commissioner, who's here with us this morning, this morning, yes. Thank you very, very much. I know you've been up long before the birds got up this morning. Well, thank you very much. And you've got your staff with you, the team. I see the financial officer, Mr. Munshaw, and then the information and communication technology, Mr. Netetaboni. Now, how do you pronounce it? Netetaboni. Yeah, there we are. Like my name, when you look at it, you're not sure which way to go. But anyway, here we are. Portfolio committee, right. Now, you've seen how we've done it. It's just about 10 to 12. I'm sure we're all on target for that. I think there's no need to give you any further guidelines because you're an old hand at this now. So thank you very much. It's over to yourself, Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Good afternoon, Honourable Members. I do believe that our delegation has already been introduced by the Chairperson, so I won't go into that. Honourable Members and Honourable Chairperson, we have prepared a somewhat detailed report in relation to the work that the Commission has undertaken in the third quarter, but I won't go into all the detail. I will only just deal with the highlights, and if there are obviously any questions around the detail, we'll be more than willing to take questions around specific issues that the committee would like us to deal with. We have the sections that we will be dealing with is the enforcement and investigation units, the legal units, the awareness, education and stakeholder units. And when it comes to corporate services, I'll then hand over to our CFO. You will see that under corporate services we've dealt with three areas, which is the human resource area, the ICT area, and the financial management. We believe that the human resource area speaks for itself, but itself if there are issues of clarification we will clarify. But the CFO will then deal with financial management, and the director, ICTs, will then deal with issues around the ICTs and the progress with regard to that and whatever. And if there are any points of clarification that members would like to take up, he will then address that. Then firstly, with regard to the area of enforcement and investigations, I think it's important for us to then just look at where we are with regard to the status of complaints. What we've picked up to date is that on average we receive 8,000 calls per month. There are 20,000 calls that are drop calls or calls that are not picked up per month. This really is an issue that I did raise at the last sitting, that it relates to capacity issues, and because we don't have a fully fledged call center to date. And as such, it's also linked to the fact that we only have 5 call center agents. So in effect, in relation to the numbers that we have, one call center agent is dealing with 5,000 calls per month, which is highly in excess of the capacity that we have. And you will see when we speak to financial issues, we will talk to obviously some of the challenges we're still experiencing with regard to call center and actually accessing a formal call center in order to be able to meet the needs of consumers. With regard to the actual number of complaints, we have 9,709 to date. We also have requests for advisory opinions, which is 4,506 advisory opinions, which really we generally talk to in the same context as complaints. We have 237 withdrawals and 680 reformulations. The staff complement has not changed much from the last time. We did indicate that we have 6 professionals and we have 31 contract workers and 3 qualified conciliators, with a total of 45 staff members that are handling the 15,000 complaints that we are receiving from consumers, or that we've received from consumers from the date of inception of the commission. The successes we can speak to from a complaint handling point of view, sorry, I'm going backwards, my apologies, is that we have put in place the enforcement guidelines, we've put in place the procedures manual as is required by the ATN in terms of the PFMA. We've developed the different work streams and we've also categorized complaints. And we've also come up with innovative methods by which we obviously dispose of complaints, and a method that we believe is quite critical and important to the methodology we've adopted to disposal of complaints is our bulk disposal methodology. And I do believe at the last sitting I spoke to it in quite detail, in quite a great deal of detail, so members are quite cognizant to us to what actually transpires in that process. There is one other process that we've also put in place, which is the conciliation process, but obviously we still are highly understaffed in relation to the number of complaints that we receive. The resolution rate is still at 42.5%, as we indicated at the last seating. You will see that there has been an increase in the number of consent agreements that have been signed off. We are now sitting at 2,301. At the last sitting, we did indicate in October we had 878. So we've gone up quite substantially. With regard to compliance notices, we were sitting at 191, just under 200 compliance notices. To date, we have issued 301 compliance notices. We've also added the category of referrals and non-referrals, meaning referral of complaints to other institutions that have been incorrectly referred to the Consumer Commission. The number of matters that have been referred to other institutions to date is 362. And we have matters that have been referred to conciliation and resolved through conciliation, and they total an amount of 1,160. So to date, the total number of complaints that have been dealt with is 4,124. And we are in the process of issuing compliance certificates, which are certificates indicating that business has come to the party in relation to compliance notices that we've issued to them, and they are actually complying in order to make sure that they resolve consumer complaints. You will note that the number is still quite negligible, and when I speak to the legal department, you will see that a lot of our compliance notices are still ending up at the tribunal, meaning that they're ending up at an adjudicator forum as opposed to having an amicable resolution with regard to those matters. With regard to our investigations, as I indicated at the last sitting, we have identified the three sectors. The investigations are ongoing, so I will not reiterate what was said at the last sitting. Safe to say that the tribunal has now set down most of our matters. There are 14 matters that are pending before the tribunal. Our first matter in relation to MTN was heard by the tribunal last week, Friday. And we are, and the tribunal has reserved judgment, so we will be expecting that we will receive a judgment sometime in the near future. But there have been interesting arguments in relation to the compliance notice that we issued in relation to the MTN contract, and we are looking forward to a positive outcome in relation to that particular sitting. I think I'll leave that slide with regard to SABC. I believe I spoke to it the last time. Going forward, we will be looking at issues. I'm now on slide number 8. Going forward, our emphasis now will really be looking at compliance with Section 63 in relation to prepaid data, meaning specifically whether or not our operators in the ICT sector are complying with the statutory requirement that unused data bundles and voice minutes should not expire before a 3-year period. You will note that there has been some media reports around some success in relation to this at this very early stage, in that iBurst on receiving the letter from the Commission actually then immediately amended their contract to make sure that they're Section 63 compliant. With regard to the other entities, we are still having ongoing discussions, but we do expect that we will have good resolutions in this particular area because we haven't received too much resistance. But having said that, with the entities that are referred to there, we still have to meet with Vodacom, MTN, and Cell C, but we have met with FNB Connect, we've met with Telkom, and we've met with G Connect, and they've indicated that they will be looking at the matter seriously, and it may not require issuance of compliance notices, but rather that they will be resolved amicably. The issues around international roaming charges, we have received 2 complaints in relation to this, and we are looking into it, but we have received substantial, very large volumes of documentation that requires analysis, and we will be requiring experts to actually look into the pricing structure. But this will really be looking at whether or not there is compliance with Section 48 around reasonable pricing in relation to contracts that are entered into with consumers. In relation to the medical and pharmaceutical industry, you will note that we did undertake an analysis, and which we spoke to at the last sitting. We have done an analysis of the terms and conditions of contract for the top 4 medical schemes, specifically Fed Health, Bonitas, MedShield, and Momentum. And we are at a point whereby we will be releasing a report. There is a typographical error there. It was supposed to be that the report would be finalized on the 15th of January this year. We are at an advanced stage, and we're in the process now of obviously engaging with the different open medical schemes before we make the report public in relation to whether or not there's been compliance with the CPA. In the area of retail and manufacturing, we believe the work there is ongoing. We have done the inspections as we indicated, and we're in the process of finalizing the investigations around the extent of violations. And we have met with some of the critical players in the industry, specifically Pick and Pay, and they have indicated that they're putting in place the relevant systems to make sure that there's compliance with the CPA. But most of the other entities where we conducted inspections, we are still to meet with them. And due to the December break, we were not able to set up the required number of meetings, but we expect that all systems will start running now that we are in the middle of the new year. The focus going forward will really be from the retail and manufacturing sector perspective, will be in relation to undertaking inspections of compliance with the CPA, especially in rural areas. We've noticed that there's now an increase in relation to the complaints that we're receiving with respect to violations in rural areas, so we'll be looking at retailers and outlets in rural areas specifically, and we will also be increasing our inspections in relation to townships. But obviously, the CFO will talk to the issues around budget, because that may be the only constraint in relation to making sure we get to the most rural and remote parts of our country. The challenges are really, we've listed quite a number there, but I think the three that require specific emphasis is the issue around, obviously, human capital, which is getting skilled individuals who are cognizant with the CPA to actually constitute the staff of the NCC. They do come at times, so it is quite problematic for us to actually secure such skilled individuals. But the second issue is around the call center. As I indicated, we have quite a substantial number of calls that go unanswered due to capacity and technological needs. And this is something that is of growing concern, because I'm sure honourable members would have picked up that we are now increasingly getting a lot of queries from the media around the fact that consumers are calling and complaining that they hold on for an hour, 2 hours, or even can't get through to the NCC. But it's simply because we only have 5 call centre agents and we don't have a fully fledged call centre. And the other issue around the challenges with complaints handling is in relation to our case management system. To date, we still do not have a fully-fledged case management system. The terms of reference are out, and we have received proposals, but the proposals that are coming in are quite pricey. And in relation to the budget that we currently hold in our coffers, we will not really be able to actually appoint any of those service providers. And we do believe it's something that's quite critical and needs to be looked into. But this is an issue that is not new to the committee, and at the risk of sounding like a broken record, this is an issue we have raised repeatedly with the committee. The issue around legal services, as I indicated, I think the critical issue is to note that 15 of our matters are now before the tribunal, and we are preparing to actually have those matters considered and adjudicated by the tribunal going forward. We do believe that there are 2 other matters that have been set down for the course of this week, and we will be sending representatives to the tribunal to represent the interests of consumers at the tribunal. From the legal department's perspective, we've also been able to recruit 8 legal graduates within our means and our budget. We haven't been able to, as we had initially anticipated, we haven't been able to recruit the services of in-house attorneys and advocates, due obviously to the fact that they do come at prime and we would not be able to afford those specific costs. But we have considered that vis-a-vis the fact that when we use counsel, counsel's rates are extremely high, and that is why we had wanted to consider the option of having it in-house and attracting people with litigation experience to actually come into the commission and facilitate the process. But as I've indicated, with the adverts and the salaries at which we are advertising the position, with positions, we did not get people of the caliber that we were looking for. But we will obviously be going forward with the process, hopefully with the new budget, to try and once again recruit people of that caliber. With regard, I won't deal with the other issues on legal services. With regard to the next unit, which is the exemptions and accreditations unit, which also rests within the legal department, this is the the units that deals with applications for exemption that have been lodged with the minister, whereby the minister requests the advice of the commission. We have made given advice to the minister in relation to the application for exemption that was forwarded by the Council for Medical Aid Schemes. So that has been done, and we are obviously awaiting the minister's final decision with regard to that application. We've also received an application for exemption from the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa for the ICT sector. We are in the process of finalizing our input, and we do believe that we will have that before the minister very soon. The last unit that I will be dealing with before I hand over to corporate services is a unit that deals with our education and awareness and advocacy. Here you will see that what we started off with is obviously the population of South Africa vis-a-vis the staff ratio that we have. Currently, we have 7 employees that are involved in awareness. 2 are trained, are formally trained with regard to conducting awareness work. 5 have been trained in-house by the commission, which makes it a total of 7. But the ratio of number of staff members to the population size is that it's 1 to every 6.8 million members of our population. And the reason I'm bringing this forth is because on different occasions we've been before this committee, we have been asked about the level of awareness, what are the methods we use, what is our reach. But I think what needs to be taken due cognizance of by this committee is that our numbers vis-a-vis the population are not very conducive in order to make sure that we actually reach the number of South Africans that we should be reaching. But be that as it may, we have not been despondent. We've obviously tried within our means to get as much information out on the commission. We've conducted to date 3 is in visas, and we believe that the number of persons reached were close to 2,500 individuals, and we conducted them in the Free State, Northwest, and Limpopo. We've also conducted quite a number of consumer workshops where we've been able to reach 4,274 South Africans. These workshops have been held in the Northern Cape. I think I was missing there. Northern Cape, Western Cape, and in Mpumalanga. We've also undertaken a lot of media interviews, and we've responded to a lot of media queries. And here we believe that we've reached, I think the figure, well, the number of institutions that we've interacted with is 28 institutions, but we believe that this has been the most successful medium by which we've been able to reach South African consumers. And we believe that the reach is just over 59% of the population. And I think we are heartened by the fact that this has really been done to a large extent free of charge, because journalists have really been approaching the commission for our views and our opinions, and we've been very vocal with regard to issues that we believe have implications on consumers. With regard to NGO seminars, which relates to accreditation of consumer protection groups, we have been to the 9 different provinces, and we've had participants from 209 NGOs nationwide, and you will see the provinces we've covered are 9 provinces. All 9 provinces we've had these kinds of workshops, and a report has been prepared, which is waiting the commissioner's final approval so that we can then come up with a methodology going forward on how the accreditation of consumer protection groups would be conducted going forward. We've also engaged with business, and the provinces in which we've engaged with business is Eastern Cape, Western Cape, Gauteng, and KwaZulu-Natal, and this has been as a consequence of invitations from different business configurations such as your Chamber of Commerce and other requests that come in on an ongoing basis. The other 2 projects that don't appear on the graph but appear in the narrative of the document is in relation to the standing advisory committees. We believe we're at an advanced stage with regard to setting those up. And we are also having ongoing discussions with SADC, because we have received a lot of queries from SADC countries around the commission, the experiences of the commission, and some of the successes and challenges of the commission. So we are engaging to a large extent with them. And I do believe the challenges that are being encountered are quite widespread, but I think the one that cannot be overemphasized is the one around budgetary constraints. But the other issue that needs to be taken cognizance of is that when we do rural outreach or outreach in your peri-urban areas, we do have challenges around political and traditional factions, because we end up finding ourselves having to explain where we stand, either from a political point of view or alternatively from a cultural or a traditional point of view, which we believe then obviously does hamper our work, because at the end of the day, we are there to deal with all South African consumers across the board, irrespective of cultural or political or social orientation. But that is one of the critical challenges that we do encounter with this kind of work. But I'll now hand over to corporate services so that they can then deal with the issues around corporate services. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. I'll just quickly go through the successes that we had under the financial management, which is under the corporate services, and then quickly let Nzia to talk about the ICT challenges and successes, and come back and browse on the issues of HR, and then lastly with the budget. For the past 9 months that we had, what we have achieved so far under the financial management is to draft all the accounting financial policies and procedures, and then setting up all the committees regarding bid evaluation, adjudication, and the audit committee, and then to comply with the DTI shareholders compact agreement regarding the preparation of quarterly reports and financial statements, and setting up the audit committee. And as we are aware, there was a point where we didn't have any budget in our account, and then yes, for now we have the budget in our account that we can be able to control and pay all our suppliers effectively and on time. And procuring the accounting system and the human resource system, which is ACPAC and VIP prospectively, which assist in drafting the financials and then managing the payroll issues. And we all adequately have the resource division within the financial management, where we have filled the key positions, although it's not all the position that has been filled. Under the challenges that we had and that we have spoke about previously, which basically, well, now it's been sorted out, it's the transfer of the funds in the NCC bank account, which we now have, and then the budget constraints that negatively impact the business strategy that we have. We talked a lot of time about the budget, and then I'm sure we are all aware about all the challenges that we had. And then sharing responsibility of the signing of March 2012 financials. By saying this is that, as we are aware, for the past 6 months, the DTI was processing and paying all the payments on our behalf. And then after that 6 months as well, and then that's when we took over after the budget that has been transferred to our account. And then where we are accountable of all the procurement and every expenses that has been paid. Obviously, we just have to sit down as to how we're going to share the responsibility of all the payments that has been processed prior, all the amount of money that has been transferred into our bank account. The transfer of assets from the DTI fixed asset register, we previously had meetings with the AG where there was a query as to whether those assets belong to the NCC or not, and those assets were mainly the laptops. With communication with the DTI, we've got all the assets on the that is stated in the fixed asset register, and then whereby we identify what we have at the moment and then what has been left at the DTI, because that's going to be another query when the AG starts. But I believe that this is going to be sorted out easily, because the initiative has been taken already by giving us all what they have in the DTI fixed asset register. Okay, now I'll just hand over to Nzireni, and then I'll come back towards the HR issues, and then finally the budget.
Thank you, CFO and the honorable members. I would like to take you through the ICT successes and challenges. And in doing so, I would also wish to indicate that probably one of the reasons I appear to the delegation is to emphasize the critical nature of ICT within any organization, and the criticality of all the challenges that we're facing, because as it relates to the success of the entire commission without the systems, you realize that even in the previous presentation, when the systems are not fully fledged, it is very difficult to carry out the mandate of any organization. Since the inception of the commission in April, one of the major achievements was that the ICT director was appointed, and immediately we had to deal with the ICT policies that are critical for the organization. We picked up those policies that the Auditor General has already raised with us that they are critical for us in order to achieve all of this that we need within ICT. When we moved offices, we made sure that we established a server room
and we employ the fully local area network where all computers can be fully networked. We have inherited computers from the DTI and we had to add some free computers and allocate them in terms of criticality of that business area. We have a call center management system, and it's one of the most critical areas which we feel that it needs to receive attention. Although we have got the system, you know that behind every system they need to have personnel. And currently, when we set and analyze the statistics that we have, when you get more than 30,000 calls in a month and you've got only 5 agents, when you divide that, we realize that we've got a shortage of about 20 call center agents. At a given moment, you check the system, you realize there are about 70 calls that are waiting, and you've got 5 agents, and we have got about 80% of drop calls. So we need to make sure that this system is fully functional and has got people behind it. But so far, we can safely say that because we've got the system in place, we are able to measure ourselves and we're able to say that there is a direction that we can take and successfully make sure that we take all the calls. We've deployed Microsoft software, and we will be paying them very soon. And I need to mention that these are very expensive licenses, and we did indicate in our previous presentations that it takes a lot of resources. So we have implemented them, and we will be entering into an agreement with Microsoft so that we pay them annually. We had advertised and gone through all the processes of adjudication for the case management system, but as the commissioner has already alluded to the fact that the amounts needed are quite high, and we need to reconsider and look at what best can we do, because this comes very pricey. As a measure of having a backup, when we moved, because we had issues, challenges when we moved away from the DTI, from the assistance, and established the NCC, we used the email system that was at the DTI, and we had challenges with conversion and making sure that everybody's on email. As part of trying to make sure that we are fully fledged and operational, we registered an alternate domain where we are able to receive emails and be able to assist all consumers through those emails. In the challenges, one of the biggest challenges we have is that we need to develop an ICT plan, and that is the blueprint that every other project that we'll do within ICT is based on that plan. But due to limitations of funds, we have had to isolate areas within what we know that will be part of the plan. And so perhaps for now, because of these limited resources, this is what we can be able to deal with now, and also attaching the importance of such area within the ICT plan. But we still intend that if we've got sufficient resources, immediately in the new financial year, we need to have that plan, because that becomes the pipeline of our ICT. Without it, we won't be implementing things that are well-researched and the proper resolutions which have been suggested. Other areas that we begin to implement, we'll be able to integrate them to the fully-fledged strategy once we have it, so that with all the other areas of ICT, such as business recovery and ERP, are talking to the ICT master plan. The other challenge that we have, because of lack of resources, we do not have IT staff. I'm about at the director level, but I am everything in one. If there's a printer to be connected, there's a person who cannot have a password, up to drawing up strategies and policies, I've got to do that all in one. So you can see that that's quite a serious challenge, because that means that for all the almost 100 people, there's one person who's going to assist, which means that you can't be able to attend to all people. And that is very critical, because you find that somebody is with an urgent matter, a consumer is sitting there, they want to print something, they can't print, I've got to leave whatever I'm doing and make sure that that consumer is assisted. So that is a very, very, very serious challenge, because you cannot run without those technicians on the ground. We have got a website that is running, and we've been talking to the DTI to hand over the website. One of the critical elements of the website is that it has got a page where people can lodge complaints. But because we don't have full ownership, they take the route, go into the DTI, and the DTI sends the emails to us, and then we're able to attend to them. So we have been communicating with the minister to say we need full ownership of the website so that we're able to run it and control it and be able to respond properly to people who lodge their complaints from the website. At the end of the day, our wish is that all complaints, if people want to reach the NCC, they can go to the website and lodge complaints and get a reference a number immediately from the website. And that is in case we've got a very fully-fledged case management system. So these things are interconnected. Once you've got a website that's full operational, you also need the background case management system so that you're able to assist people and give people reference numbers promptly. So we hope that before the end of this financial year, we'll have our website and we'll be able to manage it and run it, and that will simplify the process of lodging complaints. The area that we are at, we're strengthening to get Telkom or either Neotel to give us a fully fledged telephone line. We're using lease lines from the landlords. One of the challenges that Telkom has throughout the country is the theft of copper. So we've been engaging Telkom since last year to see what would be the best method for having the lines running into our building. And the promise that before probably the end of this month, we'll have come with a proposal. The reason we want Telkom is that the reliability of their lines and make sure that we have systems that will be able to take whatever volume of calls that we receive. Like I indicated, in a given time, you check the system, you find about 60 calls coming through. So that needs a reliable system. And within the system that we have, you realize that sometimes you cannot handle the volume of calls that comes through. So the theft of copper has been quite a serious challenge. Now, in short, in summary of the challenges, we have developed the terms of reference for business recovery plan, which is disaster recovery, for the ERP, case management already advertised, and all these are just waiting. If we got enough resources, we'll be able to go ahead and implement them and make sure that all our systems are up and running. The power cut, which is also linked with the disaster recovery, we will need to address it with all the necessary equipment that we have. So much of the challenges within the ICT area is that for the ICT area is very expensive and we'll also need a lot of resources. And with those resources, we will be able to realize our mandate.
Thank you, Mzia. I'll just briefly go through HR and challenges. Some of the information that is here is what the committee already know, so I'll just quickly go through. All the policies have been drafted, developed at Manco, and then the positions on the chief director level has been filled. And then as we sit now, we have a total staff of 81 employees, of which 47 are on contract and 34 are on permanent. And 46% of the staff in total, out of that 81 employees, are males, and then 54 is females. And then the 45 unemployed graduates appointed on contract, and all those are on admin level. So we do have a large number of staff that is mainly on administration level, and then few people who are skilled, who have been employed, who are occupying middle to senior management level. 4% of current staff is disabled, and then we had a climate survey at some time during the year, which indicated all the positive results, which contradicts what we see on the media. And then we implemented the VIP payroll system, I think, as I indicated, on the successes that we had on the financial management. Only 32 of 135 employees of approved positions have been filled, and then that is mainly due to the budget constraints. And then on the executive level, 2 out of 5 are on executive are females, and then 3 out of 5 is males. And then the high volume of work with only few employees is continuously being one of the challenges in HR. Well, the last point is just the staff turnover rates relating to only 1 month in particular, whereby we lost some of our investigators, which have gone to the DTI. And the communication between NCC and the DTI, more especially on the staff issues, has been one of our challenges as well. And then the lack of performance management system has been one of the major challenges, because it goes down to setting out all the performance management of all our staff, because it has to start from the commissioner, deputy commissioner, and then it can be downgraded to all the employees. So as a result, it has been quite difficult to perform, to draft the performance management system for all our staff. And as a result, we use only the strategic document to be able to check if the staff is really basically meeting the targets as set out on the quarterly targets that has been put on the plan. And then there's relevant skills in the market that is lacking, more especially on senior level, mainly senior investigators and research statisticians and other scarce results that you hardly get on the market. So that will be the end for the HR unit. I'll just quickly go through our budget set at the end of 31 December 2011. The budget, as approved, at the beginning of the year, it's been 33.1 million. And then operational cost, as we said now, is 20.6 million. And that leaves us with 12.4 million. And then if we have to deduct all what we have procured in CAPEX, which is IT, computer hardware, and furniture, that leaves us with 17.6 million. And then if we continue to the next page, sorry, 7.6 million as we speak now, as at the end of December 2011. And other transactions that I put down is just to indicate how critical or how we're getting into a red zone of basically depleting our budget. And the estimate has been done on what we still have to process during the month of January, which is now. And then whereby by end of Jan, as we speak, we'll be left with 3.6 million rand. And those big items basically is mainly payroll, the rent, call center. What happened with the call center, because it's one of the critical areas that has been highlighted by the ICT manager here and the commissioner, is very critical with what we challenge on a daily basis, where the public is complaining about not answering the calls and so forth. So this is a critical area that we have to sort it out. But at the same time, it's a concern when it comes to our budget, whereby we are in a position where we're not sure as to where we have to fully implement it now as the end of financial year, unless maybe we get something, additional budget from the DTI, or maybe the portfolio committee can motivate us to have it. And that excludes other operational costs, which are minimal in figure. So this is just to highlight on how basically we are at the moment, and which is critical, meaning that at the end of March, definitely this figure will be depleted, and we definitely will maybe have to sacrifice a few of things that we need to pay if we have to be able to maintain and pay the staff costs and other important fixed costs that we committed. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. I think that brings us to the end of our presentation. We're open to receive questions.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. The members, those of us that were just cheer yourselves up with cheerful now, alert. I'm going to start back first, seeing as your questions are not always answered. Honourable Albert, Honourable Harris, the front, please, front row. Honourable Mabasa, Honourable Kwabasa, Honourable Smala.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to state that I think you're doing good work under very difficult circumstances. And I think that it's quite perplexing that you do not get enough budget, for you have a very wide mandate if you look at what you need to deal with. So what we need to do, we need to look at ways to make sure that you get the funding that you truly need to capacitate you and to continue the good work that you're doing. I would just like to ask a few questions. In terms of the industries that you are investigating or that are out there in general, has any, and which of those have asked for exemption? And on what basis would the exemptions be? And including the cellular industry, I know they have been challenging your jurisdiction. And can you just give us an update on that status of that? And then also just a brief background on the MTN case. And then, once again, as I've said, the funding is a real issue, and you need to actually tell us, the committee members, what you would need so that we can impress upon the DTI to ask for enough from the Minister of Finance in the coming year so that you can do your work. legal resources, it's problematic that you don't have access to legal information and libraries. And I think it would be very important for the DTI to make sure that you have immediate online access at the very least to LexisNexis or to Utah to make sure that you can actually do your work properly. And then I think just as an idea going forward, it would be good to see if you can employ more disabled people because of the work that you're doing is more brain work as opposed to physical work. So it creates an opportunity to employ more disabled people. And then as far as senior investigators are concerned, I see that you have a lack of those personnel and that expertise. Many people are leaving the South African Police Force, South African Police Service, for various reasons. Many are leaving because they are overworked, underpaid, and I think that would be a good source for you to go have a look to get experienced people going forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner came in October last year and said that they needed an extra 94 million rand and made quite a detailed case, including the actual numbers of what they would be spending it on, and I understand they didn't get that money. So I'm actually surprised that the situation isn't a bit worse than it could have been, given the impassioned plea you gave last time. Obviously, the frontline activities where you're getting all those thousands of calls that aren't picked up are the immediate first-run effect of that shortfall. I know you have 24% staff competency across the organization, but how many staff would you require to handle those first round of complaints? How many additional staff would that require, and how much would that cost? In October, the minister amended the ability for low and medium capacity municipalities to complain. They can essentially now complain to you on various sections within the Act, but not the full Act. Since that notice has been issued, how many complaints have you received roughly from low and medium capacity municipalities? And do you still believe that you have the capacity to handle complaints from low and medium capacity municipality in terms of the entire Act? You once complained to us about the DTI and an issue around office space. Are you satisfied with the space that you have now? And then, Chair, three more questions. The opt-out registry, what is the status of that procurement, and when will it be completed? And the issue with the ICASA and yourselves on the regulation of telcos. Was there a resolution of that? Are you working with the ICASA now? What's the status of that? And then, Chair, may I ask two questions to the DTI? The first is a simple one. Why would you not give full ownership of the website to the Commission? And secondly, what is the status of the inquiry into the Consumer Commission? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Harris. Honourable Mabasa.
Thank you, colleague Chair. My question is, noting that the Commission is making impact, especially on the poorest of the poor, and that one notes in workshops when the Commission ran workshops, but also through media, we pick up either both through radio and also through TV. But my question is, to what degree is the Commission equipped to run and work with those people? Because the greatest danger is to interact with people and to lose them on the way. So is there a system of managing that? And then the next question is, I think the Commission is of such a nature that it has to equip communities to themselves be able to solve certain issues as communities, so that as we go on, there are certain cases which do not necessarily come to you, but which are resolved by community members themselves in a way they can organize themselves. But then the last one is, with rural areas, is the Commission satisfied that it is reaching out to rural areas and equipping them properly?
Thank you, Honourable Mbanza. Honourable,
thank you, Chairperson. On the slide that talks to transport on page 7, I think, slide 14. I just wanted to draw your attention to one very specific issue with regard to flights. I'm not sure whether you are aware of it. That there are, or at least there is one flight, Velvet Sky, which when you miss a flight, you almost immediately forfeit the ticket altogether, and the money with which you bought the ticket. That was drawn to my attention a few days ago, and I would like to draw your attention to that. If you haven't heard of it, there could just as well be more than one flight to where that kind of challenge to consumer. The second area is with regards to slide 30 on page 15. Yes. I was just wondering whether that is not a challenge of the general public not quite yet aware of the kind of important work that you are doing and how it benefits literally every individual of the 50 million people that we have. And therefore, that would require of you to have a very a long-term kind of strategy on how you reach out to these communities and explain yourself that you are not representing any party political position. You simply servicing the consumers. So that when you do your work, you are not bogged down with those kinds of experiences that you're making reference to. Slide 39 and 40 on page 20. The lack of staff, you made that point twice, part of your challenges. And one would have liked to know what recruitment strategy are you using? But secondly, is there a program or in your plans to train, to recruit and train your staff in-house? I raise this question, Chairperson, because you listen to the public, to the private sector, and it will always say we are not employing because we lack skills. And as government, we can't say the same thing. We must be able to address that. And lastly, on page 45, bullets 2 and 3, page 45, or is it slide 45? Yes, I think it's. Yes, slide 45. Again, a similar question, but very, very directly. I'm sure if you approached the institutions of higher learning, you might just be able to identify the relevant personnel that you require. are you in a position to do that in an attempt to deal with that challenge? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. And then we have Honourable Salah, and then the last question or comment will come from Honourable Salah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Once again, the key areas of this presentation are two, is the budget and the call center, and the rest of others follow on the motivation of the two. I just want to take opportunity to go to slide 9 of the investigation successes, the focus on rural areas and so on these investigations. Generally, and I'm not speaking as either a lawyer or an investigator or anybody from the commission with some special knowledge. I'm speaking as a layman that lives in the rural areas. Observation is that there's a lot of foreign retailers who have taken over business that were falling from the old general dealer shopkeeper type of when the spaza shops came into the play. Those guys no longer were able to leave distance. Now there are a lot of guys from Pakistan, from this country just below the Mediterranean Sea, Somaliland. Yeah. Those guys are getting into these shops and renting them and taking over that business. A lot of them. What is the legality of those particular operations? And that's as you refer to slide 9 investigations, whether that particular area gets broke, and do you find those operations legal? You know, in the previous problems that we had around xenophobia, much of that was also mentioned as we made investigations. Then, this is referred to in slide 13. I'm sorry, I spoke about slide 9. Slide 9 makes reference to the medical aid.
That was slide
13. Yes, that was slide 13. Slide 9 makes reference to the medical aid. And my immediate question was to say, in the selection of these, why did you leave PABET behind? PABET. Yes, all members of parliament belong to a medical aid called PABET. Yes. That possibly we should lead by example. why taking others on without checking as to whether our medical aid complies? You know. Now I'll get to the issues on slide 39, read with slide 44 and slide 46. That when I read these together, they don't seem to give me what I want to hear. Slide 39 makes reference to the challenges relating to the shortage of staff. And then slide 44 refers to the high staff turnover wherein members of NEHAU went back to DTI. And that was refers to shortage of staff. And this other one refers to from that staff that you have, others moving out to DTI. I'm not able to read this together. And slide 46 saying to us the problem of finances as raised in the previous presentation has been addressed, if I got the correct impression, in the sense that it looks like there would have been complaints about money in the last presentation, and in this presentation it was saying that money has come in. Okay. Now, just correct my perception there, if I'm reading them wrong. And on the transport, now the last one, very last one, is the Northwest Transport. Northwest Transport, is that rail, air transport, or land transport? Which, what transport is that from Northwest?
Honourable Mala.
Thank you, Chair. It's clearly that that this department or the commissioner is not going to receive extra funding from DTI. So it means you've got to start working cleverer and how you do things. But in the same argument, I want to say that when we were here last time around, in the Marks building, I recall that the DTI came out and said that the commissioner's department is not spending its money and it's not allocating those money. That's why they did not get those monies. Now, the alarming fact, if I'm right and I do my mathematics right, you're going to be 2 months in red, your last 2 months of your budget cycle, because at the end of January, you should spend your last 3.5 million, between 3 to 4 million, and then you're going to go into the red zone. So that talks to how you going to answer the AG on your next report, which is going to raise some other concerns. In that, are there any discussions between yourself and the Department of Trade and Industry on a long-term solution on how you peak in certain months or towards years or programs that needs to be evaluated coming in so that you don't get your full 94 million but that you step it up on a yearly basis in order to fulfill what your mandate is. Talking about working a little bit smarter, it's obviously when you need to reach the communities in order to get the message out there, in order to get it out there, that your printed media is the best option going out with the numbers that you've got and what you've got towards your end. Is there a bigger emphasis from your side this financial year in order to improve that printing media advertisement, maybe in conjunction with other departments if you need to work a little bit smarter in order to get that message out? The complaints that you do receive, the majority of those complaints, does that inform your present situation on your investigations? That you not take to heart that my colleague, Mr. Salal, just said to you, what about that group or companies that are treating the public maybe unfairly, but that it's based on the amount of information that you receive and the quantity of that, and then that pushes you into either going after MTN in this case, as it is to now, or maybe some of the medical aid schemes or whatever it is, but what actually informs that? And then also, I also want you, maybe if you answer Honourable Albert's question about the terms on what determines the criteria is, I understand that the penalties towards not fulfilling the compliance certificate or not getting to that is maybe say 10% of turnover. do you enhance the hardest penalty first, or is there some sort of a leeway that you do? I'm trying to see where do you go in, where do you aim in, and what do you do? The last one, just to end up, will be towards the ICT sector, just to confirm, and maybe the DG can come in the year, is the Microsoft system that you are using. Is it so that the department should be using a open source software approach, you know, that size of, and was that taken in 2007 as a decision? And if it is so, who actually recommended to go onto the Microsoft website, and then what type of programs do you use in order to, for me to understand that you want to go onto your own website and to own that, and how will that interlink with the other departments or other government programs and then personnel? Thank you very much. I'll try to keep it short.
Not much shorter, but thank you very much. Honourable Albert, you've got 30 seconds.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity to ask a further question. I forgot something very important with regards to municipalities. We have established that the notice that the Minister has issued to declare the medium and low capacity municipalities as exempted was actually out of time. We sent you a letter in that regard the end of last year to have a look at that. But the effect of that would mean that those municipalities are not exempted at all, because the notice issued is irregular and therefore is not valid up initio. So therefore those municipalities are actually thus fall under your jurisdiction. And I'd just like to know whether you have received our communication in this regard, and whether you will investigate this. Thank you very much.
Right. Now, members, I'm just asking one question myself. I'll put the rest in writing. I was somewhat concerned about the information on the consumer workshops, it's other things, especially when referred to a nationwide approach, because I believe there are certain commissions in the provinces. Perhaps not all of them are up and running, and you could just confirm which are and which aren't, because where they are up and running, I would have hoped that the key people in that province could have all been brought in with other provinces so that they could share the load here. They do, after all, get a budget allocation for this. So perhaps you could just indicate how that occurs. Now, members, it's just 10 to 1, and I'm going to be asking the Commissioner to complete her responses in 15 minutes, please. I know she can do that. Thank you. We were somewhat long-winded with members all taking, other than 2, 4 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I'll try and just deal with the issues that you're thinking. The industries that have applied for exemption is the medical and pharmaceutical and the ICT sector, which are in industries that have been identified for investigation. So those are the industries that have. The issue around the jurisdictional challenge, it is an issue that is before the tribunal, and they will be making a decision around that. That is more specifically in relation to the city of Johannesburg, because they have raised that concern in their papers, and we believe the tribunal will be making a finding on that. The date of hearing, I believe, is the 20th to the 21st of February, if I'm not mistaken. Decision will be made on that. The MTN case, there the question was simply put is there's been a point in limited they've raised. The compliance notice was issued against MTR and P2I LTD, which is the licensed entity. They believe that the notice should have been issued against MTN SP, the service provider, which they believe is the entity that actually provides the service to the public. We hold a different view. We believe that the regulated entity is the entity that is liable. The issue around the funding details, we believe these details were given at the last hearing. We can make them available again. The issue around legal resources being available, we are obviously obviously working to get that. Increasing statistics on disabled people, when we come and present our business plan, you will see we plan on increasing statistics around that. The issue around the police being suitable for senior investigations, they are suitable for some investigations, but other investigations, retired policemen would have challenges. For instance, into the ICT sector, you'd need specialized skills. Into the medical and pharmaceutical, you'd need specialized skills. The issue around the letter from the municipalities, we have not received that. Maybe during the change of the email addresses, that could have been lost. If we could, we will provide you with our new, I will provide you with my new email address, if that could then be forwarded to myself. With regard to the issues around office space, yes, we do have a suitable office space currently, and we're satisfied with that. ICASA, We are working with ICASA. I think we've accepted that we need to obviously accept joint responsibility because we are getting complaints from the industry, unless obviously the exemption is granted and a decision is reached otherwise. With regards to the opt-out register, I believe the position is still, as we indicated at the last sitting, that we are still awaiting feedback with regard from the ministry with regard to whether or not we will be receiving additional funding for that, because a decision has been made to house it within the NCC as opposed to outsourcing it. The issue around low capacity and medium capacity municipalities, there has been a task team that has been set up in order to deal with that, and I do believe that the department will obviously elaborate with regard to fuller detail around that. And I believe there has been a report that has been prepared for the minister, but I have not had sight in relation to that. The complaints that we're still receiving is in relation to your bigger municipalities opposed to your low to medium capacity municipalities. With regard to whether we or not we reach the poorest of the poor, we are making every effort to reach the poorest of the poor, but I'm sure you understand that to reach our rural areas, there are cost implications, and as I indicated in my presentation, because of the limitations in relation to budget, we may have to do a serious cut in relation to the rural outreach that we do. Just to answer other questions around this issue, there was a suggestion that we should obviously use the consumer protection offices in the provinces, and there was also a suggestion about collaborating our efforts with other entities in government. We are collaborating efforts with the Department of Social Development, who do a lot of rich rural outreach. In relation to the municipal offices, yes, we have been in discussions with municipalities, but we don't have programs of activities in all the provinces. So in the provinces where we don't have programs of activity, we have then obviously taken it upon ourselves to do the rural outreach, because we believe consumers must have equal access around the issues. The issue around equipping rural communities to solve their problems, I think slide number 26 speaks to that. That is why we have been undertaking seminars with NGOs, because the strategy of the commission is to identify NGOs in those areas, equip them, skill them around the Consumer Protection Act enforcement of that, so that they can then go out and ensure that they enforce the act and deal with issues of complaints resolution on the ground in relation to these rural areas. So that is our long-term strategy with regard to making sure that we equip rural consumers around issues of consumer protection. There was also a question around slide number 7. Slide number 7 currently only deals with road transportation. We have left out the fact that the Commission has also undertaken a study around air transportation, and we have found that the transgressions that you're referring to around consumers being expected to forfeit their money immediately when they are not available for a flight is contrary to the Consumer Protection Act, because the CPA does specify instances whereby a consumer should not lose their right to actually use their ticket. For instance, if they're unavailable due to issues of ill health, or it is an advance booking and they cancel timelessly, they should still then be able to be entitled to get their refund. We are in the process of discussions with the airlines in order to see whether or not they are willing to change their terms and conditions to comply with the CPA. Should they not be willing to do so, then we will issue compliance notices to compel them to do so. And we've done an analysis of all the airlines, not just Velvet Sky. So we've done a complete analysis. And if the Honourable Member would like to get a copy of that analysis, we are more than willing to make that available. With regard to, I think we've spoken to the issue of the long-term strategy on reaching out to communities. There was also a question around the recruitment strategy, of whether or not we are adopting a strategy of recruiting people and training in-house. If you were to look at our slide number 42, and I think we've spoken to this issue quite extensively on previous engagements, currently we are actually more surviving on our contract workers as opposed to people who are specifically skilled to undertake the job. If you look at slide number 42, we talk about employing 45 unemployed graduates. These unemployed graduates are people who are being trained on the job to actually assist the Commission with regard to making sure that we get the work done. That is how we've been able to actually get so much work done with very limited resources. We've actually adopted the strategy of bringing people in and skilling them. Maybe I can also just deal with the other question that was asked around slide number 39 vis-a-vis slide number 44. Slide number 39 talks about staff shortage of staff with regard to ICT skills, the IT skills. There's a problem with regard to getting those because obviously to train people on the job would not be possible because they need to obviously have the basic technical know-how in order to be able to then adapt their knowledge to application within a work environment. Then under slide number 44, we are talking about investigators. There were investigators within the NCC, but there were members of NAHAL who then elected to go back to the DTI, which then obviously left the NCC without an investigation unit because they were all pulled out on the very same day and there was no prior notification to the NCC that they made these applications and that a decision had been made to return them to the DTI, which then made it difficult for us to plan in advance in order to cater for that. So the one slide talks to investigators who went back to the DTI and the other slide talked to skilled individuals in information technology. The question around the Northwest transport, whether what type of transport that is, I beg your pardon. Yes, I thought I'd leave that for the CFO to actually address. But in relation to 46, I think there has been a misunderstanding. What I think the CFO wanted to indicate was specify that money was initially not in our account. For 6 months after the establishment of the commission, there was no money in our bank account. All our transactions were being undertaken on our behalf by DTI. Then midway, I think it should have been October. September, October. The money was then put into the account of the NCC. So the amount was not increased. It was just the money that was then put into the account of the NCC. So I think there was that need for that clarity. And then the Northwest Transport we're referring to is road transportation, your buses, because we're undertaking an analysis around the pricing and the terms and conditions in relation to road transportation because we've received a lot of complaints around that. I think there are just two more questions that we've been asked around approaching institutions of higher learning for them to actually assist. We have been in discussions with the University of Witwatersrand, specifically their legal department, in order for us to get people who are skilled in relation, who are trained, legal graduates who are trained in consumer protection, because apparently they are providing a course in relation to that. So we thought that it may be prudent for us to actually get law graduates who have that training in order to come into the commission, either as interns or on full-time appointments, or as interns with the prospect of having a full-time appointment at a later date. And we do believe that that program will be in full force at the beginning of the next financial year. The issue around, I think there was a question around legality. Okay, the issue around the rural retailers, the Pakistani and the Somali rural retailers and the legality around that. I think from the Commission's point of view, we've just looked at two specific issues. The issue around the pricing of the products that they actually sell in those particular outlets, and the second issue is in relation to issues of hygiene and compliance with health standards, because we have received complaints where consumers are complaining about the health standards that are maintained within such institutions. And then the issue around PALMED, which I assume is the Parliamentary Medical Aid Scheme. We asked them to do an investigation in relation to closed medical aid schemes. The only investigation we have completed to date is in relation to open schemes. So we asked them to conduct an investigation in relation to our closed medical aid schemes, and we will consider PALMED as one of the schemes that we would investigate should obviously the need arise, and I will obviously go take this matter back to our investigation team and see whether or not we can actually include it in the investigation. And I think there were just the issues around the finances and the issue of the AG. I just want to indicate, Honourable Member, this is an issue that obviously as the Chief Executive of the institution, that is critical because we are finding ourselves between a rock and a hard place because if we suspend the call centre process, we will continue to be on certain media, we will continue to be called by different media houses every single week to explain why it is that consumers are calling the commission and they can't get through. And we have been at great pains to explain that this is the problem. We only have 5 call center agents and we are coping the best way we can. So if we leave that process, we are going to have a problem with the call center, with continuing queries and consumer complaints not being resolved on an ongoing basis. But on the other hand, we also have the operational requirements of the institution. And we believe that we have tried to the best of our ability to keep the costs in relation to human resources at the lowest level, or obviously without actually compromising standards. So we are actually finding ourselves in this very serious predicament. But I do believe if really nothing really gives at this point in time, we may have to again go without a call center for the next 3 to 4 months. But I don't think the situation will really abate in the next financial year because the allocation, I believe, is only $45 million. And we'll still have the same problem where we have a manual case management system and a manual call center and a non-technical call center, which then obviously puts us in the very same situation whereby you will find that our staff members are actually working very hard because I heard one of the honourable members saying that they would have expected that we'd be doing a lot worse. I think the thing that has been our saving grace to date is that we have a very committed workforce and they are really willing to go the extra mile in order to make sure that consumer issues are resolved because we are at the cold face of seeing how consumers are desperate for a resolution and without our intervention, they really actually have no other hope or other avenue in which to deal with the issues. But at the end of the day, if there is no light at the end of the tunnel, we may have to compromise the call center. So that is the reality, to make sure that salaries are paid, rent is paid, and all other our basic needs are actually catered for. But we don't see any end in sight, even if we would like to work a bit smarter around this issue. The issue around rural media, yes, we are looking at that as an option, and I believe that a lot of your community newspapers are picking up on the Commission's work, and we've received quite a number of questions around the activities of the Commission, and we respond to these questions on an ongoing basis. The issue about the trigger of the investigations, yes, they are triggered in relation to the trends around the types of complaints that we're receiving and the volumes of complaints that we're receiving. You will note that we spoke to the issue of the motor industry at the last presentation we made to this committee, and it is not one of the areas that we're proactively investigating. The reason we are doing that is because we felt that with the motor industry, we need to have a more comprehensive understanding of it, deal with the volumes of complaints, and then where we actually pick up systemic issues, then we conduct a specific investigation into those systemic issues. And we do believe that by the end of this financial year, we'll be quite clear around the systemic issues, and budget permitting, we will then go into the relevant investigation. The issue around penalties, yes, we have asked for the maximum penalty of 10% against this institution. That is why we're saying the matter against MTN has been heard, and should the tribunal allow us to go into the merits, we believe we have a very strong case in relation to the merits. We do believe that the tribunal will give the penalty of 10% of turnover, and we believe that will have a serious impact in relation to the funding requirements of the Commission because we will then be able to go and motivate the National Treasury that we'll actually be given more funding because of the contribution we have made to the fiscus. But obviously this is still an issue, and this is still a moot point to be discussed. Madam Chair, if I can just be allowed to ask the IT manager to just deal with the question around the Microsoft system and the open source.
Thanks, Commissioner. I think the question is basically about Microsoft versus open source and also the website. I wish to say that on comparison, when the whole issue of open source came in, the impression was that it's going to save a lot of people money. It's free, the free code and all the other things. But what has come out to light is that much as we can get it as a free code, but the skills and the maintenance and the support that comes in, equal comes back to what Microsoft costs. And the other challenge that we have, the availability skills in the market. In most of the organizations, the usage of all these open source products is not yet picked up. And it means that if I was to introduce it today, I would have to go on a massive training. Because if you stop people from using Microsoft XP or Windows 7, you need to train them on other operating systems. So it's quite costly. So we made a conscious decision that In the meantime, if we need to go open source, I will only restrict to the servers at the background where nobody will access it. But also it needs very big technical skills. So at this point in time, we do not wish to go that route with limited resources that we have. And I don't think that's related to website. Website softwares and others are quite different. The only challenge that we have now is that we must just get ownership and be able to run it from our side. So at this level, Microsoft seems to be the better option. Government has preached open source, but the maintenance and support is quite expensive. The skills are not yet here.
Thank you very much.
I think at this point there are some questions which were not perhaps due to time constraints not adequately responded to. I think one of them would have been the one on slide 30 to do with the whole thing about political traditional factions, barriers to entry, etc. And it may be more constructive if you could come back in writing, which will enable us to pursue it further, as I understand it, Honourable Corbasa, unless you personally felt that it was totally covered.
Chair, I would appreciate further engagement on that subject.
So we do need to get that, and time is not totally with us today. There were two or three other questions which, although were responded briefly, needed, you know, a bit of fleshing out. And I think having got the first response from the National Consumer Commission, members with the support there of the committee secretary will be able to get this back into writing and we can communicate with the commissioner more adequately in this area. So I just want to perhaps recall for the commissioner that we did receive some understanding at our previous engagement that DTI would monitor the budget, as it were, to see when the vulnerabilities arose, and that this could then be addressed in a mutual engagement. I would certainly hope that that continues as such, and that mindful of the, you know, closure of the financial year, which is not too far away, and fresh budgets, there would be a constructive and practical way without, as you say, Commissioner, compromising the vision and mission and the operations of the actual Commission itself. I don't think that is the intention of any member here to see this compromised. Having said that, I must really thank you, Commissioner, and the DDG, who have been asked some questions from members as well. Well, not the DDG specifically, but DTI, you know, as I understand it. And we do want those responses as well. So we will address that to you in a separate letter, DDG. So members, I'm not going to regrettably facilitate any further questions or comments here, because I want you to look at the draft program that has to be in another office tomorrow so that it can be approved. So I would like to thank the DDG and the Commissioner and her staff. Members, please look at the program. And I understand there was one challenge that we faced, and the Secretary will immediately address the date of when that arose and why. If you would just